Al will be forever the myth.
You're the king of kings, Al. There's
always a pecking order. The little peckers never mess with the big peckers. So I'm a rooster, and he's a chicken.
This episode of the Bodybuilding Legends podcast is brought to you by our sponsor, Florida Alternative Medicine. All right, welcome everybody to another episode of the Bodybuilding Legends podcast, where we talk to the legends of bodybuilding, and we also talk about the history of bodybuilding, and I'm your host, John Hansen. On today's show, we are going to have part two of our interview with Ed Connors and Mel Chancy. We had part one up last week, and this was kind of a reunion between Ed and Mel because they met back in the early 90s. When Ed was one of the owners of Gold's Gym out in Venice, California. And Mel Chancy, at the time, was the leader of the Hell's Angels out here in Chicago, where I'm from. And he was visiting California, and he was thinking about maybe getting into the pro wrestling business because he was friends with Hulk Hogan, maybe the acting business. So he was kind of looking for some opportunities. So we had part one of our interview up last week. And on today's interview, we're going to have part two. And on this interview, Ed and Mel are going to talk about a variety of different subjects, including social media and how some people are promoting themselves. And then they get into a discussion of Rich Piana and what a great job Rich Piana did of promoting himself as a unique figure in social media and how that really changed the internet for a lot of people in the fitness industry. And then Mel's also going to talk about how he got his nickname, Road. And finally, they're going to talk about training hard in the gym. And also a little bit about the Olympia this year coming up in Las Vegas in December. So got a really good interview again with Mel Chancy and Ed Connors. And I'm going to read some emails we got from last week's show in a minute. But before I get to that, I do want to mention our sponsor, who is Florida Alternative Medicine, where age is just a number. If you want to feel great, optimize your energy levels, burn fat, and balance your hormone levels to maximize your potential, then go see the experts at Florida Alternative Medicine and Weight Loss. Their certified and knowledgeable staff will work with you to achieve your goals and get you the results you've been looking for. They offer a wide range of services that ensure you will not only look and feel amazing, but also be comfortable knowing they're there for you every step of the way. Their competitive pricing, along with their quality products and services, are just a few reasons to give them a call. So call them at their office number out here in Tampa, Florida, 813-922-8939, or you can reach them at their website, which is flalternativemeds.com. Again, that's flalternativemeds.com. Tell them that you heard their ad on the Bodybuilding Legends podcast, and they will give you a free consultation, plus they will give you 20% off your first order. All right, so what's going on in the world, guys? We are now in the third week in October. It's going by so quickly. Hope things are going good with you. We do have some emails, as I said, on the Mel Chancy, Ed Connors interview from last week, which was part one. I also put up a new video this week on YouTube. This is the 1979 in bodybuilding review that I did with Jerry Branham at the end of last year. If you'll remember, what I've been doing for the last few years is instead of doing a review of the current year, since we are talking about bodybuilding history, we always go back 30, 40, and 50 years into the past. And that's what we talk about. So at the end of 2019, we talked about 1969, 1979, and 1989. And I put up the 1969 interview that I did with Jerry about a month ago. So now I've got the 1979 review up. These videos take so long to put together because, as you know, I add pictures and sometimes video clips from the contest we talk about. And so when we're going back that far, I have to find the exact contest or the exact picture from that contest to put up because that's how I do my videos. So it takes, sometimes it takes like 3 or 4 weeks to get these done. So I did finally get the 1979 review up. So that's good. I do want to mention a couple of my guys who are in the Fall Fitness Challenge, the John Hansen Fall Fitness Challenge. They started it on September 28th. This is a 12-week transformation program where they are trying to transform their physiques in 12 weeks. And I set it up for the fall so they would be in shape before the holidays. So this contest, this challenge, is going to end on December 21st. So that'll be the 12th week. And that way, these guys will be in shape for the holidays this year, and they will also go into 2021 looking fabulous. So now we're on our third week right now, but I did want to mention some of the progress that some of these guys are making, which is really amazing. It always amazes me how fast some of these guys can change their bodies once they get on a good diet and a well-structured training program. So Nick went from a beginning weight of 189 pounds, and he had a 36 3/4 inch waist, and now he is at 177 and a half pounds, so he lost over 10 pounds, and his waist is down to 34 and a quarter. That's amazing progress in only like 3 weeks. It's unbelievable. So he lost 2.5 inches off his waist and about 12 pounds in only 3 weeks. And Mario also achieved some amazing results, especially in his waist. His weight went from 196 pounds with a 42-inch waist, and now he is at 191 pounds. So he only lost 5 pounds, but his waist is down to 37 and a half. That is crazy. So what is that, 38, 39, 40, 41, 4.5 inches in 3 weeks. That is unbelievable. So congratulations to these guys, and congratulations to the other guys who are following the program and really making good progress. I'm excited to be working with these guys. One more here. Mark, this is in only 2 weeks. Mark went from 218 pounds with a 43-inch waist, and in 2 weeks he went down to 212 pounds with a 41-inch waist. So the waist measurement is even really more impressive than the weight, because the waist is all fat. The weight can be a combination of muscle and fat. Hopefully we're going to keep the muscle as we lose the fat. But, man, that waist measurement really going down. 2 inches in 2 weeks. That's amazing. When I diet, I try to lose 1/4 of an inch a week. So in 4 weeks, I'll lose an inch, but I'm losing it, I guess, a little slower. That some of the progress these guys are making is just unbelievable. All right, let's get to some of our emails. If you guys have any emails you want to email me directly, you can do that at naturalolympia@gmail.com. And as I said, I also have a YouTube page under my name, John Hansen. And you could also go on there, because I'm putting all of our interviews now up on YouTube, since we're doing all of our interviews by Zoom. So the video as well as the podcast goes up at about the same time. And if you want to watch the video, you can also leave a message there or a comment there. All right, so this was part one of our interview with Mel Chancy and Ed Connors. Steven said, great show. So good that John lets his guests talk and lets the conversation flow, rather than feeling the need to interrupt all the time like some hosts. Great, great stuff. Greg said, Jim Helwig, the Ultimate Warrior, was my training partner here in Atlanta, Georgia for 2 years or more, though I had won the Georgia in 83. Then Jim Helwig, who won the 84 Georgia. Lots of good things said about Jim. He was very intense and a great guy. Ron Hobbs said, has Ed ever released his book? No, I think Ed is still in the process of working on it, so that'll probably be a while. At least a year. He has 500 house guests, and he's got notes about, I don't know if he's going to put all 500 in the book or how he's going to do it, but I think it's going to be a pretty extensive book, and I think he has to look for a publisher afterwards. So it'll probably be a while, Ron, probably at least, I would say at least a year. Matt said, great interview, John. Michael said, incredible show. I really hope there's a part two to this conversation. By the way the show ended, I definitely think part two is coming. Yep, it's up today. George said, I visited there, Gold's Gym, in the 80s to 90s, meeting Joe Gold at World's Gym. It was something else. I missed those days so much. And yes, Arnold was also there every morning. And Gwen said, best one yet, John. So here are the comments we got on our 1979 Bodybuilding in Review with Jerry Branum. And this was always an interesting conversation, as it always is with Jerry. And we did a review of 1979. So we talked about the 1979 Mr. America, which was won by Ray Mensur in probably the best shape of his life. And along with that, we mentioned Greg DeFerro, who was second to Ray in the heavyweight class. And we also mentioned Ron Tufel. And then we went into a discussion of the 1979 IFBB Mr. Universe, which was held in Columbus, Ohio that year with the Mr. Olympia. So that was a really great event. I was there. I was 16 years old. And on Saturday, they had the long prejudging and then their finals of the Mr. Universe. And then on Sunday, they had the Mr. International and the Mr. Olympia, which was Frank Zane's third win. So in the Mr. Universe, Samir Banute won the light heavyweights over Ron Tufel, and that was a very close decision. And then in the heavyweight class, Josef Wilkosch from Germany, who just passed away last year. He beat out Ray Mensur, who had just won the Mr. America. So we talked about that. And we also talked, of course, about the 1979 Mr. Olympia with Frank Zane and Mike Mensur. And we also made special mention of Chris Dickerson because that was Chris's first Mr. Olympia. It was his Mr. Olympia debut in 1979 after having quite an extensive career with the AAU and in NAVA. And we also mentioned the NAVA Mr. Universe, particularly the amateur one where Ahmet Anulu from Turkey barely beat out Tony Pearson in the amateurs. And then Bertel Fox won the pro division over Dave Johns. So check that out. That is on YouTube right now under my channel. All right, so we got some comments about this video, and it got a lot of hits. Got like 1,000 views in like one day, so that's pretty good. Nicholas said, I have to say that Frank Zane's shape, size, and proportion at the Mr. Olympia 1979 was a sight to behold. Zane was at his absolute best that year, and he displayed maybe the most intelligently crafted body ever at that contest. Jim said, Jerry states, Mensur's abs stuck out from stretching them with heavyweight Roman chair sit-ups. He's really just speculating. Then he states people saying stomach extension in bodybuilders can't happen because of digestion constantly moving food along. The theory is actually the massive amount of food stretches the colon out, causing stomach extension, not the actual food. He states one theory is fact and gets the other theory completely wrong. This comment says, I met the late Ron Tufel when he guest posed at the 1978 Mr. Canada in Toronto. He was very friendly and nice to me, and he looked incredible. Jim said, Arthur Jones measured Arnold's arms in near contest shape at 19 and 7/8 inches. Ray Mensur was at least 50 pounds over contest weight and holding a great deal of water. His arms were 20 and 3/8 inches. Jones had an agenda, so he often used information in a dishonest way to sell his product. Yeah, I believe that because Arthur Jones was a really big marketer. And yeah, he did do whatever he could to sell his product. Jerry said, another very fun and interesting episode. I graduated high school in June 1979. I enjoy listening to Jerry reminiscing on the past years. Zane in 1979 was amazing. All the bodybuilders mentioned are memorable greats. Good stuff. David said, I've been weight training since 1966, so I came up with and followed all these guys, including Jerry's writing. Thanks so much for these great shows. I really appreciate them. This comment says, Chris Dickerson looked even better at the 1980 Mr. Olympia. He was bigger and even more jacked, and he got second place. Had one judge not got timed out by showing up late for a judges meeting, Chris would have been Mr. Olympia 1980. After the contest, it was pointed out by many of the competitors that several of the judges were close friends of Arnold. Busick was a close friend of Arnold from when Schwarzenegger lived in Germany. Park was Arnold's idol, as well as a close friend and mentor since he was 19 years old. Kawashima was another close friend from Hawaii who often brought Arnold to the islands to guest pose. This comment says, planks also work the transversalis abdominis muscle, a.k.a. the core. David said, cheers, John. You are a gentleman. Robert said, great video, John. Yeah, what's up with big bellies? But years ago, they didn't have them. It's strange to have ripped abs but bloated. Are they holding visceral fat, maybe? Can GH or insulin cause weird things to happen like this? Who knows? I've heard GH might cause intestinal growth, right? Philip said, first class, thanks. David said, John Hansen, your channel is great. I always look forward to your videos. Respect from England. And Odessa File said, Wilkosh was an Olympic weightlifter before he started bodybuilding, so he had that rugged, powerful look like the Mensur brothers, Viator, Sergio, Franco, etc. All right. So thank you guys for your comments. And like I said, if you want to email me directly, you can do that at naturalolympia@gmail.com. Also, I'm working on a new booklet. This will be an ebook, I think, unless I decide to publish it also as a hard copy. But it's going to be about how to do a body transformation. All these fitness challenges that I've been doing this year sort of got me inspired to write this book. And this will be like the steps that you take to change your body, lose fat, gain muscle, and to do it in like a 3-month period like we're doing these fitness challenges. So I'm working on that now. If you guys want to be on my email list, again, just email me at naturalolympia@gmail.com, or you can go to my other website, which is johnhansonfitness.com, and you can leave your email address in there, and then I'll keep you up to date on when this book is available. Hopefully I'll get that out before the end of the year, because that'll be great motivation going into 2021, of course, that's always the time everybody's motivated to get in shape. And this will give you a basic framework on how to change your body as far as structuring your diet and your training program. All right. So that is all I got. That is it for our opening. Here is part two of our interview with Mel Chancy and Ed Connors, where they continue their conversation talking about Gold's Gym in the 1980s and 1990s and old school bodybuilding and some of the people they both met. Here we go.
I've been sending talent to WWE for their tryouts, but very few guys have made it. But, you know, I think there's something wrong with that because I've sent some great talent to them.
Yeah. Yeah. I always meet them too. I always meet the guys. So at the bodybuilding shows and stuff, I'll see the biggest kid. I remember at the Arnold, I see this big kid, you know, and he's walking. You can tell he's young in the face. And he's walking over to me and he comes up and he stops in front of me. He goes, "Road?" And I'm like, "Edson." It's like, "I'm friends with Ed Connors." I go, "I already knew that." You know, like when you say that name, nobody knows. I mean, half the people, I did a podcast and people were like, "Man, no, we never knew that about you. We'd known you 25, you know, years." They didn't know me back in that day, John. Right. Didn't know that. Right. You know, I never said,
"Well, Road, you just don't look like a Mel."
I mean, right. Right. People ask me all the time now that I do the podcast and stuff, and they say, "Man, how did you get that name?" It's funny because one of the back in the day, one of the angels, I was, you know, 17 years old, and he was at a bike shop, and I pushed his bike. He needed a start, so I pushed him to, you know, you jump on the bike, hit it in the first gear, pop the clutch. And he goes, "Hey, don't push me through the wall, okay?" And I said, "No, we'll get you going. Get on the bike." I push him and stuff. He comes back, and he goes, "Hey, what's your name, kid?" He goes, "What's your name, kid?" And I go, "Mel." And he goes, "Melvin?" And I go, "Yeah, named after my dad." And he goes, "Okay." He goes, "You don't look like a Melvin." He goes, "You look like that guy from that movie, The Road Warriors." He goes, "Wait." He goes, "What was his name?" I go, "Mel Gibson." Go figure, right? Yeah. He goes, "Okay, that's what I'm calling you. I'm calling you Road Warrior." And then the warrior part dropped off and the road thing came into life. And that's where that name came from, man, for all them years.
That's really ironic that Mel Gibson was the Road Warrior. Yeah.
Yeah.
And that was, you know, again, that was a fantastic movie, but if they let me cast people, I could have upped it a notch.
Yeah, you knew the characters, Ed. You knew the characters. It's funny because people say, "Oh, you know, when they see me and Terry or something like that, they'll be like, oh, he copied Scott Steiner. He looks like a Scott Steiner," or something like that. They say about me, and I laugh in my head, and I'm like, "Man, I was rocking this look before Scott Steiner was."
Bro, do you know that I knew? I'm the one that told Scott Steiner to do the Fu Manchu mustache.
Oh, did you?
Yeah, I knew him and his brother, who I really liked. They were on the road with Sting and Ultimate Warrior in the early days.
Baby face too, because they didn't have no hair on their face, John, back then. Yeah, Scott had no hair. He had the mullet and clean facial hair, you know.
But, you know, I said, you know, if you have the mustache like that, you'll look meaner, tougher.
Yeah.
And he did it, and he dyed it in kind of a funny fashion. But no, that was Scott and Rick Steiner. His brother was an incredible athlete. They were Olympic wrestlers from Michigan.
True wrestlers,
They're only 5'10". They were your height.
Yeah.
They were fantastic wrestlers and had a great look and big Papa Pump. Yeah.
Yeah. But
I said, you know, grow that mustache to look tougher because he had a baby face.
He had that baby face. Yeah. So I laugh. I'm like, I just say to myself, I'm like, I was rocking that look when I was 20 years old, I had the facial hair. When I was 16, 17 years old, because you had to be 21 to get in the club back then. And when I first got around, you know, the guy that brought me around, that sponsored me into the club, he's got killed. He's on a tombstone here. And we're driving downtown to the city. And he's telling me, "Okay, you remember, man, you know, you're 21 years old." You know, I said, "Okay, Al, I got it. You know, I'm 17. And I get in the room and they all tell me, the guy said, "Okay, man, so you want to hang around with us, huh?" And I said, "Yeah, I would like to. I like the motorcycle stuff. I'm very interested in, you know, joining this club." And the president at the time says, "How old are you?" And I kind of stopped and I looked around the room, man, and I just got that case of fear, right? And I go, "I'm 17, but I'm going to be 18. And he goes, "What?" He looked at Al and Al goes, "You told me you were 21. I go, "I know I did, because I met you in the bar and I didn't want to lie to you and blah, blah, blah." And so on the way home, he looked at me, he goes, "What happened there?" And I go, "Man, I was too scared to lie in that room, man. Them guys were intimidating back then, you know." So the role was 21, but, you know, a year or two later, I'm still back around. And finally, when I was 19, they were like, listen, you look 30. You're going to age horribly. So let's go. Let's bring you in the club, you know. So that's why I was the youngest guy, you know. I was the youngest guy to become the president of that, you know, the Hells Angels back then. I don't know if, you know, I've been gone 20-something years. I don't know how they have it then. But back, you know, now. But back then, I was by far the youngest. You know, the next guys were well into their 30s that were the presidents.
How old were you, Mel, when you were running it? How old were you?
23. 23,
okay. Wow.
Yeah. So.
John, I actually grew a beard to look older when I was working as an architect. In that picture in front of Gold's Gym when it was in Santa Monica, you can find me, but I have a beard.
Oh, really? That group shot?
That group shot. I'm in it. I'll send you a picture in the blow up of me. But no, I was 30 years old. And again, I'm designing the Neiman Marcus store in Beverly Hills. And I look like this kid. So I grew a beard.
Yeah. And
I mean, it's a lot about costume. And, you know, people need to put more energy into how they portray themselves or how they look.
Yeah.
These guys that are posting all these pictures on social media. I mean, you know, it gets a bit old.
Yeah.
They need to do different things, right? And they need to be more aware of how they look, because that's their image. I mean, I see guys with incredible looks that just are seem to be clueless as to what it's all about.
Yeah.
I don't know if I should name names, but God, it's just, why do they think they're popular?
Yeah.
You know, it's a look, right?
It's a sell, you know? People don't want to see, just like bodybuilding, no one wants to pay for a ticket and go watch a guy that's up on stage that you could see the looking like the neighbor cutting his grass.
Yeah.
You know, people block to that massive look. Kind of like when Rich Piana came around, and we talked about this, right? You know, I watched him compete in the Nationals in 2009, you know, and when he was first starting to use the Synthol, and I'm like, oh, this guy looks like he could be a good bodybuilder. And the next year he came in and he was kind of had some tattoos, and it was like, I think he's ruining his chance here now. But he obviously seen something else that was going on. He hit the right time, the right place. He hit that niche, and man, you know, once them expos started, you knew where Rich was at with his booth, because the line was wrapped around itself three times.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And you had top pro bodybuilders that had 100 guys in their line, you know, and this guy's, you know, and he tattooed himself. He did what he did. And, you know, I only got to meet Rich just a few times, you know, talk to him a little bit. But I mean,
Rich was one of my favorites, Rode. And, you know, when he lost the overall to a middleweight in 09, at the end of 09, he just said, screw it. You know, I'm going to go nuts with whatever and the ink. And then he developed his own brand eventually. But no, he was brilliant the way he manipulated his, and he'd change his hairstyle every month just to get attention. Like Lee Priest or Jay Cutler used to do.
Yeah.
Just again, it's these little things that add up. But
Rich did not care about, you know, at the time everybody's like, guy's bizarre. Well, you know what I mean? He knew the marketing. I mean, whoever, yeah. I don't know if he brought that idea to his own head or he had somebody helping him out, like, you know, put these tattoos on you, you're huge, do these videos. I mean, he told me one time, it was me, him, and Branch Warren, and we were at an expo, maybe the Arnold or something, and we were like, hey, we're going to go train. Do you want to go train? We're training back. And he looked straight at us and he goes, guys, I'm not looking to train like that. He goes, I kind of do a little different thing. He goes, I go in then later at nighttime when the gyms are closed. He, you know, I don't think he wanted no part of training back with me and Branch like that. But he had his own gimmick that worked, you know. And a lot of guys, you know, listen, I had no beef with Rich whatsoever, but a lot of the bodybuilders did. A lot of the IFBB pros did, because, you know, he took a lot of hype away from a lot of people, you know.
Yeah.
Well, but Rony, he knew how to work a booth at an expo. I mean, these guys that just, you know, they're all covered up. They're bending. They hardly look at whoever they're autographing a picture or working or taking a photo with. Rich worked his booth. I mean, I don't even know when he left to pee or eat.
Because
he was there 8 hours. I watched him in Europe. I watched him in the States. And I don't think there's anyone I know that's worked so hard for his fans.
Yeah, true that.
You know, it's ridiculous how, I mean, you go now and they post a sign saying, you know, so-and-so will be here between the hours of 9 and 10 or, you know, 2 and 3. They're working a couple hours. You know, that's not where it's at.
No. like you said, the covered up, the hoodie, the covering all up in sweats and stuff.
Yeah.
Take it back to when we were kids and flipping the magazines. I didn't want to see. I wanted to see Lee Haney in a tank top and a pair of shorts all jacked up and stuff. Yeah. That's what we were into. I was into that look. I wouldn't want to see some of these guys. And, you know, as you know, this generation came in the last, you know, 7, 8, 9 years, like Ed said, sitting down, glum face, signing, thank you. You know, no, who wants to wait for all that? Rich's booth was like a party.
Yeah.
He had the crew with him. Everybody was laughing and joking. There was music going,
yeah.
You know.
That's what I admired about Arnold. When he steps out of his home or whatever, he knows he's in the public domain, and he owes his fan, you know, the attention they want. I mean, I would see Arnold almost every Sunday before his divorce at church in Santa Monica with Marie and his Maria Shriver and his four kids. And he would spend 20, 25 minutes on the steps of the church signing autographs or taking pictures. Mm-hmm. You could tell she wasn't happy, but Arnold knew he had to give back to his fans, which is something a lot of the guys haven't learned. Like Lou Ferrigno doesn't, you know. I remember so many of my house guests were disappointed meeting Lou because he was such a jerk in the gym.
Yeah.
When he met them, and Arnold is a class act, and yeah, an amazing individual, really.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Rich Piana really took a chance, didn't he? Like, who would have known that putting the synth on his arms and getting all those tattoos that it was going to take off like that? I mean, he really changed his body and just took a chance on making it, but he was right on. I mean, he did make it big.
I think he was so upset with his placing at that show. And so in Sacramento, I was there. And can you imagine? He was 275 pounds on stage at 6'1", and he lost to a middleweight.
Was that the Nationals, Ed?
No, it was more of a local show. We had a pro component too, I remember, but
okay.
No, I mean, he was so upset because he was there. I think his mother was there, a lot of friends, because he grew up in Sacramento.
Yeah.
He was actually trained by Bill Cambra, one of the early employees of my Gold's Gym in San Francisco.
Okay.
Yeah, I probably met Rich when he was 19.
Wow. Okay.
He died at 46 or 47.
Wow. Yeah. I mean, at the end, I seen him not too long before that he passed, and you could just see everything was catching up with him, you know, the recreational stuff, and let's be honest, and it was just not good. I could see him. Everything was a hindrance from the breathe, and he just was, you know, you can only burn that candle like that. I mean, between the bodybuilding drugs and the recreational stuff, and he got wrapped up. Like you said, John, he created that
image
world that took off for him, that wherever he went, he was stopping traffic and lines up the gazoo. And I mean, I can only imagine. I heard at one time he was literally making 30 grand a month with just YouTube stuff and everything that was going crazy. And, you know, it's a lot of money.
Yeah.
For a guy that just hit it out of the blue like that, you know, and, you know, it just really caught up to him, you know, he could have went on. But after he passed, that's when I watched that whole internet success of people start to go down because you didn't have to be a pro bodybuilder no more. You could have, you know, hit it on the internet, you know, Larry Wheels benching all that weight or this guy doing all this. And, you know, and next thing you know, you're getting a million followers on the Instagram, and then people want you to promote them and stuff like that. But after Rich, it started tanking, and I don't think you could reproduce that again now, you know?
Right. Yeah, and you're right the way he trained too, Mel, because he trained at a powerhouse downtown, or the athletic club.
Yeah.
The last couple of years he was living in Tampa, and I seen him train. He'd be like lifting a 15-pound dumbbell, but he'd have two cameras going on filming him, you know? That's all he was concerned about was the videos, you know?
That's it. They told me his crew that was around him said he would, you know, be at them booths all day long. They go eat a meal. They go to that gym at night because they get a key and the gym would be closed. They film a bunch of content, and he edited his own stuff. He did not want nobody editing. He knew the angles he needed at. It was like, like Hulk said, everything they did back in the day was a gimmick. Everything. If hey, I'm not going to do this or die this if it's not going to work for me. Hulk had a big decision when he had to go from the yellow and red, eat your vitamins, say your prayers, Hulkamania, to switch into the NWO, the bad guy. you know, he sat down when that idea came across the table at him. He looked at Eric Bischoff and he goes, hold on a minute. I'm making $1 million a month saying eat your prayers, say your vitamins, you know, eat your vitamins, say your prayers on the nine yards. You want me to turn heel now? This might not go good. And it took off for him even further than that. But everything's an angle and a gimmick, you know, and Ed's right about it. When you see it and you say, hey, I can use this for this, Terry would be the first one to say, because I'm by far not the toughest guy around. I was never a fighter growing up, but I had a look. I was a big kid. They taught me how to wrestle. Old man McMahon gave me my name. You know, it was Terry Bowler first, then he came out Hulk, and then it was Hulk Hogan for the Irish. And lightning in a bottle. He hit it and went. You know, Jay Cutler, lightning in a bottle at that time. Everybody's got that moment, and it's, everything is a gimmick of what you're doing. And if you can understand that, it'll work. But nowadays, I just don't think that people realize that, Ed. It's like you got to be, if you're in an industry and stuff, go with it. You know what I mean? Like Ed said, grow this. If you're doing this for wrestling, you got to have a look. Something's got to attract you to this. I happen to flip through the, you know, and watch some of these characters from wrestling, and I just look like, what is going on over here, right? Like, what's Vince doing? He doesn't have anybody that's grabbing that attention to people. Everybody's just a normal-looking guy out there, you know, with no pop.
Wow.
Yeah, I think people, you know, people want sort of a fantasy escape. They want something unreal. Yeah, they want something unreal. They want something they can't see, you know, wherever they are. I mean, in working on my book, it's fascinating to contact, you know, former house guests, and their biggest influence, I would say, in growing up were these superheroes, Superman and early, you know, Steve Reeves and Hercules in their earliest days, and then Superman and then the Marvel characters. They wanted to be larger than life characters.
Yeah.
And that's what it's all about, something that you just can't see. And that's probably the part of the magic of Venice. You would go in and see all these freaks, these cartoon characters, really, many of them.
Yeah.
I got a good one for you guys. So one of the visits there with Mike when he was still in Ed's house, I'm in the gym and Mike's over by the water fountain. I hear him yelling in that Boston accent, you know, that thick brogue accent and stuff. And him and Flex Wheeler were having a little dispute because I believe didn't Flex live upstairs at one time, Ed?
Well, actually, Flex Wheeler and I owned a duplex, and Mike stayed in the lower half of it.
At one time, a different house than the one I stayed in. Yeah, correct.
I owned several houses at one time, and that was kind of where, after you left the beach house, you went to that home.
yeah, and so I came walking out. I was by the pro shop or somewhere, you know, and came walking out, and they were mad about something. I think it was a girl or something, if I can remember right. And I looked in the back of, you know, Flex behind them, and he had Paul Dillett and Charles and Rico. And I remember looking up at Paul and I'm like, God, this guy's massive, right? He's just a mountain of a dude, you know? And I said, but, you know, I got to back my brother up here with whatever goes on here. And nothing escalated. They just had a little bit of a bump in heads and stuff like that. And I remember looking at him. But I remember about Paul, you know, Paul never didn't strike me that he was in any kind of good cardiovascular shape back then. That he just seemed like he.
Oh, Rode, he had, Paul Dillett had really bad asthma.
Yes.
I actually, funny story with him, I took him to meet Joe Weider when he first came into California. And Joe thought he was a pro already and gave him a contract. Because I would bring people to Joe, you know, especially amateurs, hoping he'd give them some money. Mm-hmm. But he wouldn't do it unless they were a pro. But somehow he, you know, Paul was so big and so, you know, incredible that he just assumed he was a pro.
Yeah.
So that was a bit of good fortune. Because, like, I remember I took Mike Francois to meet Joe when he was still an amateur, and also Dennis Newman. And Joe wouldn't give either one of them a contract. And I said, well, he said, how do you know they're going to turn pro? I said, Joe, either one of them is going to turn pro this year or next. Well, that's exactly what happened.
Yeah.
They both turned pro. And then Joe ended up having to give them twice as much money to get them under contract because I got them other sponsors. So
yeah,
it was a funny that Paul was the only one for whom that happened, where Joe mistakenly gave him a contract. thinking he was already a pro.
Because he was so happy. Massive, you know. So
well, he was up to see in person, man. He was unbelievable.
Man, he was scary. He was big and scary, but I don't think he was that tough, bro.
No. No, yeah, no. Like you said, he had the asthma.
With asthma, yeah.
Yeah, he was always breathing a little heavy, and you know.
He would have trouble getting through a posing routine.
Yeah, with asthma, yeah.
Yeah, it's funny. Now he's in Canada, I think he's returned to.
Yeah, he's got his own federation out there and seems to be doing very well. Just doesn't bother anybody, just does his own thing and, you know, seems to be enjoying life, you know.
Somehow legally he can't come into the U.S., but
yeah, I did hear that, Ed. I don't know
what that's all about, but
same with me. I can't go to Canada. So yeah. From my old days, you know. So still now.
Yeah.
You know,
really. So,
which is okay with me. I always say, you know, I'm not looking to get on these big, you know, flights and go to Kuwait and Dubai. And listen, I'm comfortable. I don't need to see all that. I'll look through a history book. So kind of works to my advantage doing what I do now. I don't have to get on, you know, Jim's not going to be able to send me to Kuwait or Dubai or nothing like that because I can't get in. So I became good friends with Tony Doherty, you know, and he's always like, Mel, come on. Yeah. And I said, Tony, I'm not going to take the 22-hour trip to Australia to get sit in a room for 8 hours and get turned around. Like, I don't want to fly. I don't like to fly like that. And he said, oh, I know a bunch of people over here. Tony's got some, you know, some deep ties over there and stuff like that. He goes, let me see. And I said, oh, you got to be honest with him. You got to let him know my past because that's going to come up when I come there, you know. And so after a few months of him, you know, Tony was going to fly me out and pay, you know, pay for the flight, get me out there for everything. After a few months of him digging, he goes, yeah, that's not going to happen. I said, I told you, them old times with the Hells Angels and what they got going on over there, that stuff doesn't leave you, you know.
Yeah. It's amazing talking about these stories, how things have changed so much. And like you said, Ed, time goes on. But you had Joe Weider giving out the contracts. You had all those guys at Gold's Gym, like the golden era, and then you had the magazines. You know, you had all the magazines. So it's like all that.
Well, the magazines were the social media of the day, and people don't realize, but it's all my house guests that helped make Gold's Gym the Mecca and helped make it the largest gym chain in the world because they would do their photo shoots in the gym, and we had the stripe painted over the mirrors with the Gold's Gym name and our mottos, our mantras. And it worked. I mean, you could pick up any issue of Weider magazine or any other bodybuilding magazine and see dozens of pages of Gold's Gym in there that we didn't pay for.
Yeah.
And that was back in the day when a full page ad in Weider's magazine cost $35,000. Wow. But just so think of all of, I mean, people thought Joe Weider owned Gold's Gym at one point, I remember.
Yeah.
Because there was so much coverage. But that way, you know, we were very welcoming to the photographers, and I actually sent house guests home if they shot at World Gym or Powerhouse. I said, you don't get it. I'm sorry, but you're gone.
Yeah, yeah.
But no, I was insistent on that, and that was how we became – we didn't spend that much on advertising.
Yeah, you didn't need to. Like you said, you didn't need to. You had all the best top guys there training there. Everybody wanted to shoot them guys in the magazine, so – You're right. You turn a magazine back in them days, you always seen the
John and wrote, I just was looking again for my book, and Shape Magazine and Muscle and Fitness were in the top two. I mean, they were two of the top 10 magazines in America back in that era, in the 80s and early 90s.
Wow.
Top 10. But they did it several million a month. The Weider magazines, they had 1.7 million copies a month.
Wow, that's crazy.
And they went all over the world. So Gold's Gym became known in other parts of the world. And that actually helped us with our trademark issues because we could prove that we were known in that country long before whoever illegally tried to register our mark.
Oh,
okay. We also then shipped clothing to those countries. So right now there are 100 Gold's Gyms in Japan and 100 in India. Thanks to that kind of early coverage.
Yeah, and there's not many left in the States, right, Ed, now? I mean, there's not.
Well, there are 680 Gold's Gyms right now, and 400 are overseas. So there are more overseas than there are in the U.S.
Yeah.
There are 280 in the U.S.
Yeah.
Now, Ed, you're supposed to meet with the current owners of Gold's, right, coming up?
Right, I'm going to meet with them in a couple of weeks. I'm hoping I can help them, or I want to know what I can do to help them.
Okay. What are you going to suggest to them? What would?
Well, I'm not going to suggest anything because I want to know. I want them to tell me what they want to do. I want to know how I can help them. And
okay,
it's not for me to suggest. I'm assuming they have their own game plan. I want to hear it and see how I could help.
Yeah. Okay.
The owner said he was inspired by Gold's Gym Venice when he opened his first gym in 1997, and he's now the largest gym chain in Europe, called right. McFit.
Because a German gym company bought it, right?
Right.
Okay.
A German company, yeah, that owns half a dozen different kinds of gym chains.
Okay. Well, that's good that he was inspired by the original, you know, by the Gold's Gyms back then. So maybe he's got the heart for it, you know?
I think he certainly has more passion than the Texas owner had, yeah. Yes.
Yeah.
I didn't talk to them during the 16 years they owned Gold's Gym.
No kidding.
They never reached out to me once.
Unbelievable.
Yeah. Like I said, they dwindled down. I mean, the gym that I bought out here, you know, was a Gold's Gym back in the day.
15
years. Yeah, that Second Chance, John, was a Gold's. And then them owners that had it, they had one in Orlando. They had three of them. And then they just couldn't get along with the people and the franchise. They became expensive for them, so they dropped it. They called it Achieve. And then when I bought it from them, I changed it to Second Chance, you know.
Yeah. Which
the new owner kept it at Second Chance, you know.
Okay.
They raised the royalties to 7% of gross revenue, which doesn't work.
Hmm.
You know, that's what McDonald's is, the fast food charge. And for those people, it's worth it, but certainly not for a gym.
Yeah.
No.
Yeah.
Mel, can you talk about that project you got coming up too?
Yeah. Yeah. So fill that in on it. So a couple years ago, I think we'll be at 2 years now in Thanksgiving, a couple years ago. So Ed, for the last probably 10, 12 years, I've been getting different offers, book deals, you know, nothing I was interested in. I never wanted to go do a book and go on a book signing. And I'm just like, it's nothing I was interested in. And anyways, these guys from New York that wanted to do the book, and they made it glitterful, you know, $200,000 signing bonus. You know, you get a buck a book, $1.50 a book, 100, you know, million copies of bestseller. But they wanted all the dirt, the redemption story of me, of where I'm at now and my walk with the Lord and stuff. They didn't care about that. They wanted the biker stuff, and they wanted to make it a Sons of Anarchy thing. So I was like, no, I'm not doing it. Well, about 2 years ago, I get a call from A&E, and they say, hey, we'd really like to do a reality show with you. And I said, oh, yeah. I said, what are you thinking, you know? And they said, well, you know, paranormal's big right now. We could see you ghost hunting and stuff. And this is funny because I'm driving across Alligator Alley here in Florida to go to the National. Because it's Thanksgiving.
Right.
So it's, you know, the Nationals right before Thanksgiving. So I'm in my car. So I got some time and I'm talking to him. And I'm like going, thinking, yeah, Henry, talking about this paranormal thing. And in the car, I'm like this, right? Like, so I said, well, you know, and he goes, well, we got another project. You know, we got an ex-mobster from New York that spent 20 years in prison. We're going to have him looking for Al Capone's money. And I'm like, geez, Geraldo did that back in our day and found nothing in there, right? Like a hammer or something, right? So I go, yeah. He goes, well, you don't sound too interested in none of this, Mel. And I go, well, you know, it just, I don't understand it. I don't know this life, you know? He goes, what would something that would interest you? You know, what would be interesting to you? And I said, well, you know, my gym's Second Chance. I'm all about the kids, my story. If I can, I speak in the schools. You know, I'm all about that Second Chance. I think that would be great, something with the youth, you know? And he goes like this. He goes, well, you know, saving the world ain't big right now. It doesn't sell. He goes, you know, so I go, well, on that note, brother, we're good, you know? So how it came about, I happened to call Hulk up, you know, and said to Terry, hey, I just got this call. And he starts laughing. And he said, man, you need to call Rock. You need to call Dwayne. And I said, you know, Terry, I don't really know Dwayne like that. I mean, me and you are 30-year friends. I have only known him for a few years. I would never reach out to him and do that. He goes, man, I'm telling you, Mel, he's $7 production. It's hot. You know, if anybody could tell your story. And so after a couple of days, he talked me into it, and I had Dwayne's number, threw him a text and said, hey, listen, Dwayne, I'm looking for a little advice. And he called me on the phone. He goes, Mel, what do you got going on? I said, well, this is what's been going on for me for the last 10, 12 years. And not interested in a book. A&E called me, and he was like, no. He's like, listen, with all due respect to our A&E family, because we work with them. He goes, but I can't see you doing a reality show ghost hunting or looking for Al Capone money. And I said, right. He said, well, why don't you let me hook you up with my team with $7? I would love to be able to tell your story and tell it the right way of your story of, you know, of course, we got to tell the A to tell the Z. He goes, but your story of redemption, your story of how you became friends with the federal agent that took you down after all them years and where you're at now and the inspiration you are to so many, including myself. Your story's amazing. So that's how that project started. And we've been working on things for the last, you know, going on 2 years about, you know, getting all the information to the team, getting the right people in place and the whole nine yards. So without letting too much out now. So the docuseries things got big. You guys seen the Tiger King. That yeah. thing was took off for the docuseries that are a thing of the present now. So the scripted world is where we're really looking at, where somebody plays me and somebody plays the parts, you know, like a Sons or something like that. You know, that's what they call the scripted world. But since the docuseries are hot, that's what we're working on right now. Okay. The docuseries part of it, to where there'd be live people like John, you go way back with me. Ed goes way back with me. You know, that's what they want. They want people, list of people that I'm doing. And so that's what I've been working on. I've been working on my lists of all the people that have known me from way back in the day to now, to seeing the old road days, who's seen, you know, and, you know, of course, you got a lot of the celebrities, all the wrestlers that know me, all the bodybuilders that know me. So, yeah. You know, like Rock said to me one day on the phone, he goes, you know, when we were talking about this, he goes, Mel, this document, what better than we got the golden goose in front of us? He goes, yeah. You've walked through all these different arenas, so to say, in life. He goes, you're the Forrest Gump of life. And when he said that to me, I had to stop for a minute. I go, was that a compliment or the Forrest Gump? So that's kind of where we're at right now. And that's what's very close to happening. We're looking for the right documentary guy to do this and stuff. And, you know, since Hollywood kind of is COVID shut it down and stuff like that, and the scripted thing is on the back burner for right this now, the docuseries seemed like it was a good fit of real people telling the story. Guys like Ed, yourself, John, you come back. So I've been making a list of everybody from the rise of where I came into, my reign, you know, the raids with the ATF. You got the agents in there. So we're breaking it down like that. And I think it's going to be pretty cool because, you know, now that I am on the phone with the team, with the $7 guys, and they're dragging all this old stuff out of me that you kind of forget. You know, you have the memories, but they're not fresh in your head. Right. You know, it's Ed, like you're going back, you know, all these years. Now that we're talking about it, I'm like, wow, what a lifestyle, what a run it was. I mean, I ventured into everywhere. I could, like Ed said, I could have been a pro wrestler. I could have been an actor on TV. I could have been a pro bodybuilder. I coulda. Yeah. I was there. You know, my focus was on the club. So, you know, so that is pretty cool to be working with these guys and having, you know, Dwayne's vision of it and working hand in hand. And, you know, ultimately I have the very say of it. And I like the part where they were like, it's about your redemption and we love your walk, your faith walk. It touches a lot of people, you know, because like I said, anybody that rode a motorcycle or was in the mob or gangsters or street gangs, everybody's got a story to tell. Everybody could write something about it. But, you know, I guess mine's a little different because of the path that I took and where I am with my faith. And, you know, and I always give that back out. The podcast you see I talk about, we go in a lot of it with the faith and what brought me to that and stuff like that. So pretty cool stuff happening, you know.
It is. That's awesome. Yeah.
Cool to see, you know.
Well, we could talk about when we did our 10 sets of squats with 405, Mel. Remember that?
And John used to always hit. And I was young, you know, and we trained in the gym. And like I said, we had a Gold's Gym and stuff like that. And John said, okay, I got this thing, man. I've been doing some research. And we're going to do 10 sets of squats. And what would we do, John? 405 and
yeah,
for reps. And then, you know, I remember one time we had like one set left. And I go, I'm done. And they had all the cardio stuff on the main floor. It wasn't separated like your Gold's upstairs. It was like right around all the weights and stuff at the
front. When we bought Gold's Gym, there were no bikes in the gym.
None, huh?
No cardio, no.
Yeah, yeah.
Bikes in the gym might as well have been snakes in the gym.
Yeah, back then, right, yeah. Yeah.
In fact, didn't your bodyguards have to bench 500?
right. Yeah.
I think you did 660 in the gym.
I got strong. I was strong. Yeah. Training with John and doing all the old school movements and stuff. I was strong. I mean, I tore my pec later in life, but I mean, I was strong bencher, strong deadlifter. I remember John did a podcast and they were talking about it, and he said, Mel didn't get them back in traps like that from not moving some weights. You know, we lifted, you know. And
you know, as you get older, to decrease the amount of weight you lift, right?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
I do a lot of functional training now, though. But I remember telling John, I'm done, John. I was thrown up in the garbage can, and all the ladies were on the bikes at the time, and I got my head in the garbage can thrown up. And he goes, you can't quit, Mel. You're at the finish line. You got one set left. And I'm like, But then were the good old days when people trained. You know, it's funny, Ed, because now I run in the industry and I get to meet all these guys, and God rest his soul, I got very tight with Dallas, you know, and he used to call me his big brother and stuff, take him
out. I got Dallas started in bodybuilding.
Did you really, huh?
Yeah, he was a gym owner in Chattanooga, called me up and said, Ed, you got to meet this guy. And he was doing tough man contests to make a living, and I said, you know, you should be competing. You should be bodybuilding.
He had the genetics. He could eat. He had the perfect triangle. I call it the Bermuda Triangle to be, you know, the best. And but I see these guys now. I see these guys that, you know, they want to be pro bodybuilders. They're training. They're doing local shows and stuff. But the training just is not the same. You know, there's some are, you know, you got these young kids that Nick Walker that just turned pro out of Jersey. He's got to be training old school crazy. He's got that density and thickness.
Yeah.
I see these guys in the gym and I'm like, man, you're missing the whole part of trying to bodybuild and build that great thick physique training. You know, they do a set and they're setting their phone up and they're more worried about the social media stuff than they are the training. And nobody takes it like the old days where you trained and you went home and ate and you might come back and train again later. I remember Matarazzo not even prepping for shows. He's like, Rode, it's, you know, 9 o'clock, let's get to Golds, you know, okay, what do you want to do tonight? Let's do some calves and some abs. Gotcha, Mike. And we go and,
right.
I don't see a lot of that passion no more, you know, hence why I think you see least men bodybuilders now,
you
know, the sport where you're seeing everybody, you know, men's physique and of course the women bikini and stuff like that. But, you know, I think you get guys that look in that audience and say, man, we know what it takes. And maybe they don't want to have to go on the gear or the, but I think a lot of people just don't want to train like that, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, the phone thing kills me, Mel. I sound like a grumpy old man, you know, looking at everybody. But all these guys are on their phones, and I'm like, you guys are in your early 20s, and you're lifting like 10-pound dumbbells, and you're on your phone, and you got your partner filming you. I'm like, you're wasting the best years of your life. You know, this is when you can really train heavy and get big. It's just, it drives me nuts.
And I was noted back in the day at USA and Golds and stuff like that, the old hardcore gyms. And back in the 90s, the phones weren't like they were now. You had a phone back then. You know, you paid $700 a month for the phone bill or whatever it was back then, the big brick phones. I dropped more dumbbells on people's phones for bringing them on the gym floor, bringing them out as our partner. People would say, oh, you're going to train with John and Mel? Don't bring that phone back there. You'll lose it. Don't bring it back there. I'd see a phone, a guy put it on the ground or the bench and stuff like that. I'd go take a 20-pound dumbbell and let it go. We didn't talk. Now it's great. Now I'm the dude in there. You know, now I just put my headphones in. I do my set. I might throw a text out. Now I'm that guy. I just would train easy, you know. I laugh at a John because he's still doing all that old school stuff. And I said, John, I can't do it these days. I'm just, my body bothers me, you know.
Yeah. And Ed, Mel was a great training partner. He'd always be rested. He'd be at the gym before I was. He'd train heavy, you know, just like a true bodybuilder.
Yeah. That was my focus for the day. Even when I was running the club, everybody knew I was going to train. And for a while, you know, I'd have to bring a security team with me. I had to train because, you know, we were at war with the Outlaws back in the day, and they were trying to knock my head off, and they knew where I was training every day because I mean, one thing I didn't do, John, is I didn't stay home. I was out, visual. I was at the gym every day. I was at the clubs every night. I mean, if you wanted to get me, you had a good chance to get me because I was out. I wasn't sitting at home. And so finally the guys were like, man, we gotta come there with you because you can't be on a bench or doing bent over rows and these guys come storming in the place. And, you know, I always had guns in the gym bag, but then it got to be where, okay, I'll let you. Yeah, you guys come on and hang out and be my eyes and ears for me while I'm training with John and the guys, you know.
Well, I'll never forget when Mike Matarazzo, you know, and this was before 9/11, but when he came to visit me in my house, he said, Ed, where do you want me to put my guns?
And yeah.
I think he had six in his bag.
Yeah.
I never had any signs saying beware the dog in my house. It was, you know, beware my house guests.
Yeah. And Mike was good. He was good with his hands. He was, you know, a boxer back in the day. Yeah. So, you know, that East Coast tough kid.
I heard he knocked a few people out.
I could imagine, you know. I could imagine.
All right, guys. Well, we'll wrap it up here. I want to thank you both for your time. Ed Connors, thanks again for joining us. And we got to share some more stories of all the, you know, for helping Mel and all the other people you helped. And Ed, good luck with your meeting with Gold's Gym, the owners there. I hope you can turn things around for those guys.
Ed, will we see you at the Olympia, possibly if everything goes good with the Olympia in December and it rolls off still? Are you going to be there?
Yeah, that's my plan. Actually, I sent a message to the website and asked if the expo was still on, and they said it is. So I plan to be there. Yeah.
Okay.
I think it's actually not a bad time. Vegas is still not really that open yet, but no, it was a great time. I'm excited to see what the new people can do.
Yeah. A lot of passion out of Jake Woods, you know, a lot of passion from him, you know, and
it's a real theater. It's seats 7,000 and it's, typical amphitheater seating, so it works better than the big arena. Yeah,
at the Planet Hollywood, right?
Right.
Yeah, and I know they were worried about the, you know, if there was going to be an expo. Shit, they were worried about if there was even going to be spectators because, like, you know, at the Arnold that, you know, I was at this year, there wasn't any for the pre-judging stuff. It was the weirdest thing because you had the judges. Then I sit right back there, and then with Jim, and then behind us is the press pit and stuff. Well, we were clapping for the guys because there was no noise. I mean, these guys were up there on stage with not one single person really in the audience besides the workers, you know. So then at night they let certain individuals in, or, you know, a couple of family members.
I thought that was. I really felt bad for the exhibitors because they had maybe a couple of days' notice, so people lost a lot of money.
Yeah, everybody did on that one. Yeah, Tony Doherty over there in Australia because they shut him down right after that. I mean, the money that these guys lost on the promotion side too and the exhibitors was crazy. But
I it's not all about the money. I don't see the death toll to me is nothing. I mean, 40 years ago, John, I opened my first gym in San Francisco. It was the AIDS era, and people talked about the mist. You know, when my former employees, we talked about how we had to clean the gym because people thought if you sat on a bike, even if it's somebody who had AIDS, you'd get sick.
Yeah.
But do you know how many people have died from AIDS in the last 40 years?
Not many, right, Ed?
32 million.
Oh, there has been that many. Oh,
32 million people have died. 40 million, according to Google, and 40 million people are living through it. And so far, I mean, we reached 1 million worldwide dead from this coronavirus.
Yeah.
Well, a population of 7 or 8 billion, whatever the world's at. I mean, that's nothing.
No. Yeah.
No.
I mean, that's like we said, our hospitals out here, nobody's in them. That's why our governor's a realist. And he's like, hey, listen, we're not keeping everything shut down. My mother-in-law runs one of the biggest hospitals out here, and there ain't a person in there with a sniffle from it. And, you know, same with Tampa, an old lady at Tampa. She goes, you know, is there a person? Are they on the floors of the intensive care unit? She goes, yes, but what they were counting everybody. So if a guy had a bypass and he was in there on the floor, he was in the intensive care unit on the COVID ward. So they were counting every single person that ever had anything done to him. So I'm with you, Ed. Open it up. Let's get moving again and get this world back going. And, you know, I'm all for that.
Yeah, Mel, you were talking about when you were at the Arnold and you were the only ones clapping. I watched that on TV last night. They had the Stanley Cup and the Tampa Bay Lightning won. And it was so weird watching these guys holding up the Stanley Cup and there's nobody in the audience. Like their team members are clapping for him. There's nobody there. It was so disheartening, you know.
So crazy. The wrestlers are in the Orlando Arena, and they got cardboard cutouts for faces, and
it's just crazy.
Crazy times. We'll have some laughs and jokes at the Olympia, of course, like we always do, and I'm always looking forward to seeing you there, and John, you too. You know, I get to see you a lot more here since we're living in each other's backyards now, but, you know, it was great kicking the stories with you. I knew this was going to be a good one once we got on here to tell some old school stories, you know.
Absolutely. Well, Mel, thanks for joining me on the podcast. It was great finally having you on the show, buddy, and I wish you the best of luck with the docudrama. And I'm proud of where you've come, man. We've known each other for all these years, and it's amazing to watch where you've come in your life. It's really amazing.
Yeah, thank you, guys, man. My love to you guys both.
All right, buddy.
And I echo John's sentiment, and good luck. And the Rock is a class act, so I'm sure you're in good hands.
Yeah, for sure. Thank you, Ed. Thank you. Means a lot coming from you guys. All right, guys. Have a good afternoon. I'll see you.
All right. Take care, guys.
Bye-bye, guys.
All right, thanks for listening to another episode of the Bodybuilding Legends podcast. Thanks again to my friends Mel Chancy and Ed Connors for joining us for these great interviews that we put on last week and this week. I really enjoyed talking to those guys. It was a great conversation. Thanks to Florida Alternative Medicine for continuing to sponsor the Bodybuilding Legends podcast. Thank you to all of you who contribute to our show on Patreon. And if you want to be a Patreon donor, you can do that by going to bodybuildinglegendshow.com, which is the official website of this podcast. And in the upper right-hand corner, you'll see a link for Patreon, so you can donate as little or as much as you want. And I appreciate you guys doing that. I really appreciate all our Patreon donors who generously contribute to the podcast every week. Next week, we should have an interview with Dwayne Broadway. And if you remember our conversations with bodybuilders like Tom Terwilliger and John Defendis, Dwayne Broadway was a great teenage champion. He went on to have a really good bodybuilding career. So we should have some really good old school stories from Dwayne Broadway. That'll be coming up next week on the Bodybuilding Legends podcast. All right, guys, continue training hard. Stay safe out there with this COVID stuff. And we'll see you next week. Take care.